the nickname J-Mo. I'm a compulsive eater living in St. Louis, Missouri. I sometimes say that I am a purebred compulsive overeater, and that both of my parents were as well. My dad probably weighed as much as 500 pounds at some times. He was a man 6 foot 6 inches tall. His nickname was Big Ox, and he was just a mountain of a guy. My mom was 5'5", so there was a, there was a big difference in their heights. But she sometimes weighed over 300 pounds. I grew up poor, and I think the family philosophy was, we may not be able to have much of anything that we want, but we can have what we want to eat. We lived on a farm. We had livestock, cows, pigs, chickens, and killed our own meat, put it in the freezer. My dad also hunted, and fished, and we had that as an additional source of food. And my parents grew a huge garden, canned and froze that food, so we never went hungry. We might not have fancy clothes or the newest vehicle, the house that I grew up in, looks pretty shabby when I look at pictures of my childhood home. But I didn't want for a whole lot of things, and we certainly never wanted for food. And I didn't realize that the way that my family ate was unusual. It was normal, right? Because we were all doing it, and kind of the community of faith that I grew up in was that way too. They would have these homecoming dinners where people would just eat till they were all ready to pop, and it was just all around me. So it seemed to be normal. But as I got older, I was always a chubby kid from the time I started first grade. It wasn't so much before that, but as soon as I went to school, I started to gain weight. There were some interesting dynamics going on there, I think. So I was, very overweight by the time I was in high school. And it just kind of continued up from there. When I was younger, my body could handle it. But as I got older, and my weight increased, I started to have health problems, high blood pressure, my knees, eventually having to be replaced. One of my hips having to be replaced, one of my shoulders having to be replaced, the shoulder on the arm where I use the cane. So probably, some of the damage to the shoulder was from leaning on the cane. And it became, clear that the way I ate was not just sort of like a normal variation of overeating, but something beyond that. And I began to feel pretty hopeless about it. I would have periods of dieting where I'd be successful. There were times when I lost over 100 pounds, and then something would shift in me, and I would put weight back on in a hurry, and often more than I had lost. I tried a variety of things beyond diets, like juice fasts and colonics. I mean, just all kinds of wild stuff to try to help myself out. In the 1980s, I should probably mention this, I did go visit an Overeaters Anonymous meeting in Carbondale, Illinois, where I was living. And unfortunately, in that meeting, someone broke a tradition, which is I was a newcomer. It was my first meeting ever. And I mentioned that I would have trouble praying the prayers that had male language for God in it. And a woman told me in the meeting, if you can't call God he, you're just going to die fat. And no one interrupted her, and no one said that breaks traditions, and no one walked me to my car at the end of the meeting and said, please come back. That's not what is supposed to happen at an OA meeting. So I didn't come back. And so as we think about traditions, it is kind of important that the traditions are there to make a safe space for our meetings so that people do feel welcome. And when someone decides to push their particular religion on you, which this woman continued to do, to basically say, well, my God is blah, is this particular God. And if you can't call God he, you'll just die fat. It didn't exactly make me feel welcome in that meeting. So I didn't come back to OA. But in 2010, some things happened, which I'm very, very thankful for. The four significant things that happened in 2010. First, a friend who is addicted to crack cocaine told me a lie in order to get me to give her money. She said that her plumbing was broken down and she needed $50, and I gave her the $50. And within a week or two, I had a letter from her with a check for $50 in it, confessing that she had lied and that she had used, and that she was a recovering addict, and that she and her sponsor had talked, and the way to make amends was to pay me back for this money that she'd stolen from me. And I thought, oh, well, gosh, you know, the way she talks about cocaine sure does sound like how I feel about food, you know? Then one day at my community of faith, my pastor said, I can tell you don't walk as easily as you used to. Is there anything I can do for you? And I said, well, I don't know what you can do for me except pray. And I just kind of left it at that. And then I needed to have carpal tunnel surgery. And the doctor said to me while I was there being evaluated for how to have this surgery for carpal tunnel in my wrist, would you like to lose weight? And I thought, I'm here about my hand, you know, and expletive word about her in my mind. I didn't call her a bad name, but I thought one. Mind your own business, lady. She shared some of her theories about why people are overweight and what you can do about it. And I read her paper and I thought, well, that's interesting. I had the surgery, and in having the surgery, I had to be sedated, and they weighed me, which I'd been refusing to do. I told my doctor, I'll come in and have you evaluate me how I'm doing about my blood pressure medicine, but I don't want to weigh, and I won't come see you if you make me weigh. And she said, just tell the nurse I don't weigh because I need to see you about your blood pressure medicine. So they weighed me, and I found out that I weighed 431 pounds. The carpal tunnel surgery went okay. And then in August of that year, a friend of mine made an appointment to see me for coffee. I thought she wanted to see me about an outside issue that we worked on out there in the world. And it turned out that when she rolled into that coffee shop in her motorized wheelchair, what she had to say to me was, I can tell you are eating yourself to death. I love you and I don't want you to die. I may weigh over 600 pounds, but I would weigh over 700 pounds if it wasn't for Overeaters Anonymous. Here is a where and when list of where the meetings are in the St. Louis area. This is the one I go to. Here's our newsletter. If you want to go to a meeting, I will go with you. And I was shocked because I was so used to this woman being such a brusque and abrasive human being, basically. She was tough as nails about the right stuff, as far as I was concerned. We were on the same side of a lot of issues, but she was just really in your face to people, which worked great for me because I'm kind of a diplomat. So she would bark at them and then they'd want to talk to me on the side because she'd scared them. So we were a good team. I thanked her, you know, for her concern for me. And in October of that year, I did decide to go to a meeting, and I went to the one that she goes to, and she met me there, and we went into the library of a church, and I found that all of the chairs in the library had arms on them that my rear side would not fit in. So I pulled up a piano bench that was in the room and sat on it to have the meeting. And I thought, these are really strange people. Because you didn't all talk at the same time, which is, you know, my family pattern is like everybody talks at once and you try to figure out, you know, who are they replying to, because everybody's just kind of on top of each other. And this taking turns thing that we do following a format is really, really weird to some of us, I guess, when we come in. But I did hear some stories in the room that sounded like me. It sounded like some of you had my experience, which is that you were eating when you weren't hungry and that you thought about food all day long. I mean, literally, I had a job that was 135 miles from my home and had an apartment in that other town. And as I drove down there, I would literally usually have two breakfasts followed by a snack, you know, followed by lunch, followed by a snack, followed by dinner, followed by a snack, and then head home to my apartment and stop and pick up something at a fast food window, just in case I might get hungry before morning, as if I ever experienced hunger. And all I could think is I was eating these things that I didn't want and that were making me feel, you know, so full and so uncomfortable was, what will I eat next? I just was in this loop and it was horrible. It was a living hell. I heard my story from the other people around the table, and I kept coming back. And I went to a recovery event in December, and tried to get a sponsor there. And I kept striking out trying to get sponsors. This one woman said, I do all of my sponsor work between 5 a.m. and 7 a.m. in the morning. Well, that didn't sound good to me. I didn't want to be up that early, So I just kept kind of striking out. I asked this guy. He said, "I only sponsor men." He was kind of following that strict AA tradition of men and women kind of thing. And I'm a gender non-binary person, so that all didn't matter to me exactly. By December of that year, I basically decided, if I want what the people in the meeting have, that that I'm kind of like, I want what they have. They say that they are abstinent, I'm going to have to give that a try. And so I risked a day of abstinence on December 1st of 2010, and thankfully I have been binge free since December 1st of 2010. And I'm very thankful for that. Now, that doesn't mean that I never make an unwise choice about food. I do sometimes, but abstinence to me is beyond what happens in any one meal. It's am I staying oriented to working the steps and moving toward a healthy body weight? And am I being honest with my sponsor? And am I pulling myself, back into following my food plan carefully, quickly? Is a lot of how I think about it. So I have released over 150 pounds, and I'm continuing to move toward a healthy body weight, very slowly, as you can tell, because it's been a long time that I've been in the program. But I am so thankful for what this program has done for my life. I'm especially grateful for the fact that I can be present with the people that I love. It used to be we'd go on vacation, and it was sort of like a series of meals and snacks with driving in between was what a vacation was for me. And now it's like, time with my loved ones, and the ability to listen to them, and the ability to see nature, and the ability to play games with my nieces and nephews, and to focus on what the material says on the wall at the art museum, or whatever it is that we're visiting. So my ability to be present to where I am instead of following the food squirrels all the time is my very favorite thing about the program. I wanted to focus a little bit today on step 11, because of it being the 11th month, and that was read earlier, but I'll read it again real quick here. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. Praying only not for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. In my step two work with my first sponsor, I did finally get a sponsor after all that striking out. Early the next year, a person in one of my meetings kind of took pity on me when I said I'm having trouble finding a sponsor, and she said, "I can be your temporary sponsor." And then she was able to make that more permanent with me. I guess somebody else left or something that gave her an opening, and I had her through step 10, and then I've had two other sponsors since then. But I'm so thankful for that first sponsor. In step two, she asked me if I prayed for help from God about my eating, and I said that I did, but it didn't seem to do much good. And she said, "Well, maybe you need to fire your God and write a one ad for a God that will be better for you then." And that was a pretty spooky thought, but because I was desperate, I had the gift of desperation, I did. I wrote that one ad, and released a lot of my old concepts of God, and each day I practiced step 11, in an attempt to have conscious contact with my higher power. And this is a practice that I have daily, that is my step 11 practice. It also incorporates several of the OA tools that were read earlier. So generally in the morning, sometimes at other times of the day, depending on whether I have something pressing happening that keeps me from getting to it in the morning. But almost always in the morning, I read three pieces of literature. Two are from OA approved sources. One is from one of our daily readers. This year, I'm on Voices of Recovery, but I also like the little white book. What's that one called? For Today, I think. Yeah, I like both of them a lot. So I always read from the daily reader, and I also read a daily devotion from my community of faith that's available online. And then I read a piece of OA literature. Right now I'm on the OA 12 and 12, but I've read through the big book. I've read The abstinence book. I've read the body and sexuality book. So just, something. I've got that new book that's the Voices of Diversity book. I'm going to start that next. So I'm always reading something, and it may just be one paragraph. If it's a really juicy sentence, I might stay on one sentence for that matter for the day and just reflect on that. But I usually read at least a paragraph, and more often maybe two or three paragraphs. And I ask myself, how is my higher power speaking to me today through these readings? And I am quiet and I reflect on that. And then I start to type it up. If I had better handwriting, I might do it in, in writing in a journal, but I have some arthritis in my hands, so typing on a keyboard is a little easier for me. So I type up my thoughts about those three things. So I've used the tool of reading literature, and I've used the tool of writing, which is great, right? And then after I've completed what my thoughts are to me about what these things are saying to me for my life today, I email that out to a list of, I think it right now it's about 53 of my OA friends, mostly OA friends. A couple of folks that aren't in OA are also on that list. As a way to connect to them, to put my hand in theirs and to acknowledge that they're putting their hand in mine. I send it to my sponsor, I send it to my sponsees. So there's sponsorship involved, and now I'm doing that as well. So I do this daily, and it really helps me be grounded. It helps me listen for what God is saying to me. I also pray the Serenity Prayer, the Step 7 Prayer, and the 11th Step Prayer daily in the morning before I do the reading. That's part of my Step 11 practice as well. And this has really enriched my life and helped me recognize that I don't go through my days alone, no matter what is going on, no matter how scary life is, whether I'm disappointed by world events, whether I have a personal challenge, whether I have a personal transition. I recently retired after a long and interesting career, and in a lot of different roles, but all on in one vocation. And learning to live a new way in retirement. So there's just, a lot that comes along, but that practice has sustained me and reminded me that no matter what I'm feeling today, eating for my health instead of eating to adjust my emotions will be a better choice for me. So I am really thankful to be a part of this fellowship. I'm thankful to be here with you. Daniel, it looks like I have a couple of minutes left, but I think I'm out of steam, and I'll just stop here and listen to the wisdom of the group. Thank you for inviting me to speak.